Good morning. It's 8:06. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta, filling in for Leslie Hatcher on this Monday, September 23rd. Bit of a chilly morning out there today, but should be warming up, and it's looking like a beautiful week looking at the forecast ahead. On the line with me to tell me more about it, I've got Cedric Haynes with ABC4. How's it going, Cedric?
Going pretty well, Parker. I hope you are staying warm there this morning. As you mentioned, chilly conditions out there. 30s in the Heber Valley right now. We've got low to mid 40s in Park City. As we go throughout today, we're looking at a lot of sunshine to start the day, but there is a weak front, a dry front, I guess we really should say, coming in as we go towards later this afternoon. What that will do is not bring us any rain chances, but it will bring us an increase in some clouds. So we'll call it partly cloudy skies by the second half of your Monday, but that's still going to keep temperatures pretty nice. So we're looking at highs in Park City right around that 70 degree mark, and we should be in the upper 70s for highs in the Heber Valley. So a nice, pleasant afternoon expected across the area. Now, as we go into tonight, it's going to be another chilly night with those overnight lows dropping down into the upper 30s to near 40 in the Heber Valley and into the low 40s again in Park City, and that'll come with mostly clear skies. Now, we've got lots of sunshine expected for your Tuesday. High temperatures will climb into the mid-70s in Park City and low to mid-80s in the Heber Valley. So we're going to start a warming trend. And as a big dome of high pressure, we call this the heat dome, very typical in the summertime, builds in, though, as we go into the next couple of days, the heat will be on. So I know we flipped the calendar officially on Sunday from summer to fall. But yes, it's going to be a very summer-like pattern for our first full official week of summer or fall, as we're going to be seeing those temperatures climbing back up to about 80 degrees in Park City on your Wednesday afternoon. And we're talking mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley. And we're going to stay pretty much right around those levels, right around 80 in Park City for your Thursday and Friday afternoons, with high temperatures in the upper 80s to near 90 in the Heber Valley. So yes, that summertime heat, we thought we were done with it, but it is going to make yet another return across the area as we get towards the end of the week. And then as we head into the weekend, we're going to keep that sunshine around. So if you have any outdoor plans, the weather looks fantastic for any outdoor activities you may want to do. Just know it's going to stay a little on the warm side. We're talking overnight lows dropping down into the low to mid 40s across most of the area. And then as they go into the afternoon highs will be in the upper 70s near 80 in Park City, and highs will be in the mid 80s across the Heber Valley. So we're looking at a pretty summer-like weather pattern here over the next 7 days or so. The chances for any cooler weather or even slight chance of rain doesn't look to appear until maybe the beginning of next week. But for now, it looks like summer is going to kind of hold on strong here in the first few days of fall. So at least the good news is we're not nearing any record highs. Those will stay in the 90s, but we're going to get close, which some folks may not want to hear as we are now into fall. Parker?
Yeah, guess we'll have to enjoy it while we have it.
yes, that's right.
All right, well, thanks, Cedric. Have a good week.
You too. Thank you.
Well, coming up, Park City Public Utilities Engineer Griffin Lloyd will discuss the next phase of the Main Street Waterline Replacement Project. Then we'll be speaking with Sarah Jo Dickens. She is the Summit Cooperative Weed Management Area's project manager. She'll have the results of the Garlic Mustard Games, a program meant to eliminate noxious weeds. And we'll end the hour with Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff. She'll have a monthly update. Getting into some local news now, the Heber Valley's wastewater treatment facility has applied for a new designation that would give it certain legal protections. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more about why some residents object to the move.
Names living near the Heber Valley Special Service District affects their daily lives, and some worry it's a possible health hazard. The treatment ponds are along the Provo River near the Legacy Bridge. Particularly in the spring, temperatures warm, the smell can be strong, and some locals say they get sick when the odor is at its worst. The Special Service District has applied to become an industrial protection area. The County Planning Department sent a letter about the application to residents near the ponds about upcoming public hearings. If the application is approved, the designation would help shield the facility from what Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh has called frivolous lawsuits. In a discussion in April about the possible change, he said local leaders are interested in credible concerns about the ponds, and making the facility an industrial protection area would not provide legal protection if major issues were found. With the application process underway, Wasatch County Council member Kendall Crittenden says the intent of the area has been misunderstood by some members of the public.
The Facebook chatter on this is that the purpose of this is to protect the sewer plant so that they don't have to update anything, whatnot. And I think that's the furthest thing from the truth.
Councilmember Steve Farrell agreed, mentioning that development creeping closer to the treatment ponds could mean more people are affected by the smell.
We just want the sanitation district to have some form of protection against this type of I'm here now, you need to move attitude. And there's a lot of false information being put out by the citizens as it relates to a sewer plant.
Their counterparts on the Midway City Council, however, have said they're opposed to an industrial protection zone. At a meeting September 18th, Midway resident Ryan Davis asked the city council to take a strong stance against the application.
Legal immunity, that's enormous. That's enormous power play to push it through in that amount of time. Like, this should not happen. And it, representing Midway citizens, like, you guys should be throwing a fit, absolute fit.
The application process involves public hearings in October with the Agricultural Protection Area Advisory Board, the Wasatch County Planning Commission, and the Wasatch County Council. Midway residents who want to learn more about the application are invited to a question and answer session at the town hall Monday at 6 p.m., hosted by Mayor Celeste Johnson. Locals can object to the application or ask for it to be modified by writing to the County Planning Department. Contact information is available at kpcw.org. Comments must be received by October 4th. Meanwhile, scientists are working behind the scenes to understand what causes the smell and what health effects, if any, the ponds might have. The Utah Department of Health and Human Services is conducting a risk assessment for a toxin called hydrogen sulfide, which has a rotten egg smell and can cause symptoms like headaches, fatigue, and respiratory problems. Data collection ran through this summer and will resume next year from about mid-April through mid-July. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
In studio with me now, I've got Park City Public Utilities Engineer Griffin Lloyd and Historic Park City Alliance Executive Director Ginger Wicks. How's it going, you two?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, so here to talk about the next phase of the work on Main Street, but I think to start, Griffin, could we kind of just, you know, give a recap of what this project is all about and you know, some of the work that you guys have previously, you know, did this summer?
Sure. So last spring, we started replacing the water infrastructure on Main Street. It was originally installed in 1984. We were seeing a substantial number of breaks. So we developed a plan to start replacing the water infrastructure from Heber Avenue to Swede. Last year, we did phase one of that replacement project. And we replaced about 37 fire lines and all the main line between Heber Avenue and 5th Street. So looking forward, we're going to start replacing from 5th Street going to Sweet Alley starting next Monday, September 30th. We'll do main line only this fall, and then next spring we'll start doing the fire lines into each individual business.
Yeah, and you know, I know initially the city was planning to resume construction next spring, but Ginger, you at the HPCA surveyed a lot of your business owners and found that a majority wanted to speed it up a little bit. What can you tell us about?
Well, through conversations after going through the impacts of the spring and working with Griff and everybody else at the city, we did survey merchants to find out if having the city come back this fall is something they would want. The trade-off with that is that they would end construction in the spring in the end of May, which is essentially giving back the merchants June, which we found in our feedback, and I think Griff can speak to this, the impacts of having, you know, construction on the street during June was very impactful to the businesses. So we did survey the street, initially didn't get a big response, so then our board members went out and pounded the pavement and got more people to participate in the survey, and the results were that they did want the city to come back this fall and tackle the main line going up the center of the street.
Yeah, Griffin, you want to touch on just kind of feedback you got?
Yeah, I think everything was running pretty smooth until tourism picked up, obviously, around Memorial Day. And then we started getting a lot of feedback from the businesses, as well as a lot of the tourists walking along the street, that businesses were a little tougher to get into with sidewalk repairs. And we also, I would say, slowed down a little bit because of all the foot traffic. So being out of the sidewalk in June is probably a benefit to us as well as the businesses and definitely the tourists.
Yeah, and can you speak to, pushing this project ahead and getting some work done in the fall, kind of the main benefit there is it does open up those sidewalks by June, or what's kind of the timeline there?
Yeah, so if you were watching last spring, the first month was basically all mainline work. So mainline, we can stay in the street itself. We're not in the sidewalks at all. So last spring, we lost that window in April of not a lot of tourists and business being a little bit slower. So this doing the fall work, mainline work, will help us so that we can start that sidewalk work earlier in April and then wrap up by the end of May.
Yeah, and just to rehash, this fall's work, which I believe is supposed to start at the end of this month, will be right here kind of by Javacal on that strip.
Yeah, so we'll start at 5th Street right here by the post office, and we'll work our way towards Sweet Alley. So as we're working our way up, we'll close between 5th Street and 4th Street, and then once we then we'll open that stretch from 5th to 4th, and we'll close from 4th to Weed.
And how long do you expect to work on that this year?
So our construction window for the fall is September 30th to November 20th, which is right before Thanksgiving. Weather dependent. It's not really dependent on if we're getting any snow. It's just the colder weather once it gets too cold and we have a hard time getting compaction. So once that hits, we'll pull off and we'll pave every Friday and behind us so that it's kind of a rolling operation. We put everything back behind us.
Yeah, and Ginger, just going through the first phase of the project, are there any other lessons or, ideas that maybe came up amongst businesses?
I think the biggest thing that we heard was communication. And that being said, though, the city did door-to-door outreach. I assisted with that. The HPCA has a page on their website dedicated to this project that can be found in the footer of our website under the Member Center. You can go there and get weekly updates on what's happening with the project. You can also see the road closure maps that Griff has put together. And on those maps, you'll see the dates as to when those road closures are going to go into effect. So I just encourage everybody to visit that page to stay informed. If for some reason you're not getting our weekly updates that we email out, the city also emails those out, please contact me at info@historicparkcityutah.com. I'm happy to add anybody to those distribution lists. But we try really hard to keep everybody informed. So we're here to try and get you the information. And if you're not, please reach out so we can get you on our list.
And do I have it right that you have requested the city permit free parking in China Bridge during the period?
Yes, so the city, again, being a great partner, last spring we started out with free parking solely in China Bridge, but based off of feedback from the business community, the city did respond and open that up in the spring to the entire historic district, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And so out of the gate, starting on September 30th, parking will be free on Main Street as well as in China Bridge through the construction timeframe of November 20th. Yeah. So it's a great time for everyone to support the businesses that are going to be impacted and come out and enjoy Main Street.
Yeah, especially during kind of shoulder season time.
I will just add quickly, though, the free parking does not is not during events such as right. Halloween in Maine and the Shotski. So just so we're all clear.
Yes. Griffin, I did want to ask, I understand you guys kind of went through this like expedited bid process because you seem to be very happy with the work of the contractor, Silver Star.
Silver Spur, yes.
So Silver Spur, my apologies. Can you just talk about what it's been like working with them?
They've been a great partner with the city. They finished ahead of schedule on this first phase as well as under budget. Yeah. And another reason for us to do the waiver process was also the request from HPCA. Mm-hmm. We didn't have time to do a formal bid process. Would have taken, a month or more. So once we got the go-ahead from HPCA to move forward with fall work, then we started pursuing the waiver process.
Yeah. So we talked through the work this fall. Can you kind of paint the picture for the rest of the project, what that's going to look like and kind of estimated finish time?
Yeah. So what we're looking at right now for fall is, like I say, the mainline work. One thing to keep in mind is we will have traffic pattern shifts. So on 5th Street at the post office, that will switch one-way directions again starting Monday as we work up the street, and then it will go back once we get to 4th Street and we open up 5th to 4th. We'll work as long as we can through the fall doing mainline work until November 20th when we come back in the spring and are doing sideline or side street work. We'll be in the sidewalk and we'll probably do the same type of process from 5th to 4th and then open that stretch up and do from 4th to Swede until we wrap it up in late May.
Yeah. And not to get too wonky, but I know we had talked about it before. I think people are no stranger to the main breaks around here. They've happened a lot the last several years. You know, what are you guys putting in? What are you taking out in terms of, like, the actual infrastructure in the ground?
Yeah, so the pipe infrastructure that was installed in the 80s was ductile iron pipe, which is a steel pipe. We mm-hmm. are putting back PVC pipe and then steel fittings. With the steel fittings, we use a wax tape that helps with corrosion, so it gets our longevity up on anything that actually is metallic. And then the PVC pipe, we're seeing great longevity with, at least 75 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Well, I think that's all the questions I had for you all, but anything else you want to mention?
I would just reiterate the road closures that Griff outlined, again, are on the AHPCA website. You can find the page dedicated to this project under the Member Center when that link to that is in our footer. And we're here to make sure that you're getting the information that you need. So if you're not getting that, please let us know.
And what's the HPCA website again?
It's historicparkcityutah.com. Okay. And if you're not getting our information, info@historicparkcityutah.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming in, you two, for keeping us updated. We've been speaking with Park City Public Utilities Engineer Griffin Lloyd and Historic Park City Alliance Executive Director Ginger Wicks about the next phase of the Main Street Waterline replacement that's set to begin at the end of this month. Getting back into some local news, former Park City School District Superintendent Jill Gilday has been offered the CEO position at a K-12 charter school network in Colorado. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on that.
Gilday announced her retirement in a letter to district employees September 16th. Then September 20th, she was offered a new position at Colorado Early Colleges. Details of the offer have not yet been disclosed. Every CEC governing board member said they had mixed feelings after the organization announced Gilday was selected as the sole finalist for the CEO position in August. However, after a thorough interview process, they unanimously agreed she was the right person for the job. For example, board member Arthur Cyphers said he had reservations at first.
I became slowly satisfied, and it was one of those things that I had to spend time in personal contemplation and thought. But I am now fully convinced that Dr. Gilday is the person that we should make the offer to.
Board Vice President Terry McDonald said the board reviewed feedback from its staff and parents, as well as feedback from Park City locals. He clarified not all feedback was positive, but said Gilday still rose above other candidates. In fact, CEC Board President Laura Calhoun said the original plan was to bring forward 2 to 3 final candidates.
Once we did all of the rubric scoring and put it all together, the difference between Dr. Gilday and the next candidate was so big that we were advised that it was okay just to bring one.
Calhoun also highlighted that the board received positive and negative feedback.
One of the executive team members said, as an ex-superintendent, that was to be expected. And matter of fact, if she didn't get that negativity there, then there was something wrong. So again, this was not an overnight decision.
Board member Fisahai Fish Abraley said he was the last to be convinced Gilday was the right fit for the position. He said he liked her style of leadership.
Her vision and mission aligns with the vision and mission of CEC. It is for generations to come, and it means a lot. The leadership style that she followed before and what she's going to follow, it is a servanthood leadership.
In a June cover letter, Gilday expressed enthusiastic interest in the role and a willingness to relocate to Colorado. She will now decide whether to accept the CEO position in Colorado. The Park City School District Board named Treasure Mountain Junior High Principal Caleb Fine as the interim superintendent Tuesday. Gilday will be available through October 31st to assist in Fine's transition. After that, she will take unused paid time off, which will last her until the official January 31st, 2025 retirement date. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
In studio with me now, I've got Summit Cooperative Weed Management Area's Project Manager, Sarah Jo Dickens. How's it going, Sarah?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, and so we're here to talk about all things noxious weeds this morning. To start, can you just give us some background on yourself, what you do?
Definitely. Yeah. So I'm a plant ecologist and have been working with noxious weeds for over 20 years now, and here in Summit County for 10 years. We also work, though, to restore a lot of natural lands and help with large-scale land management planning. But for the Summit CWMA, we really focus on noxious weeds, so educating the public and then actually getting out on the ground and mapping it, seeing how bad the weeds are, where they are, how do we best control them, and then how do we help people on their own land and on public land take noxious weeds under control, but then restore the land so that we don't just leave bare ground, because bare ground typically invites the next weed.
Noxious weeds sound bad. Why are they bad?
Each species brings its own problems, right? So first off, noxious weeds are state designated. Okay. So it's not like your dandelions in your front yard. That's just because we maybe don't like them. I like them, but some people don't like them. They are chosen by the state from long lists of weeds that people recommend for listing, because they can impact our natural resources, the economy, or some of them health and safety of humans and wildlife alike.
Yeah. In Summit County here particularly, or maybe across the state generally, I mean, what are kind of the most prevalent noxious weeds that we see?
I think everyone recognizes, because we hear about it as soon as it comes up, musk thistle and Dyer's woad. Some people might know Canada thistle, and I really hope that in at least Summit County, people are pretty aware of garlic mustard at this point. But I think it's important to note that while those are very important to control, a lot of them are everywhere, mm-hmm. right? Like Canada thistle, musk thistle, you see it everywhere. So sometimes people don't see us getting on that right away, and it might be because we're dealing with ones that aren't as prevalent, maybe have 5 populations in the county, and we want to make sure those populations are removed so they don't become as common as some of the musk thistles and the Canada thistle.
Yeah, well, speaking of garlic mustard, I understand you recently had an event called the Garlic Mustard Games. What does this entail?
It is so much fun. This year we had over 100 volunteers yet again. Runs all season long, starting some May maybe, ending sometimes in August, sometimes even in October. Totally depends on how long that plant decides to hang around before it develops its seed. Folks form teams. A team can be one person. Mm-hmm. Team can be 10 people. And all season long, they pull, either coming to events that we have or along our trail systems. We have little stations with bags and information. You can pull on the trails, leave the bag there, we'll come get it, but scan a QR code and log the number of pounds that you pulled. And at the end of the season, we have a big party for our top weed pullers. And so there's prizes all season long that are provided by so many of our local businesses here that I guess, if you think about it, noxious weeds aren't really that sexy to most people, but swag from our local businesses is exciting enough to lure them in, and then they become addicted.
Yeah, sounds fun.
And this year we pulled 13,181 pounds of garlic mustard. And one of the reasons we do this is because we want to reduce the amount of herbicides that we're using. And unfortunately, because there are so many acres and acres of weeds to control, herbicide does have to be a part of our program, but we try to minimize it more and more every year. And by pulling that many weeds across the acres that we did, we didn't have to spray over 300 backpack sprayers worth of herbicide.
Yeah, well, and where does all that garlic mustard go?
Unfortunately, it goes to the dump. And the reason for that is that it actually has a chemical in it that can suppress the germination of other plants. And research is ongoing on how long that can last. But if we pile it and leave it in the woods and let it break down, it continues to suppress plants until it's totally broken down.
Yeah. And then I guess you also held a separate event that sounds somewhat similar, but it's different plant, hounds against hound's tongue. So what is hound's tongue?
Hound's tongue is yet another what we call biennial, like garlic mustard, but it will germinate in 1 year. It'll stay this cute little rosette that looks like the leaves look like the tongue of a hound. And then the next year it flowers and seeds. People who have dogs, particularly long-haired dogs, probably have met this seed. It sort of looks like a teardrop, but covered in Velcro. And so people's dogs will run off trail, like get back, and you have to pull all these burrs out. That's probably what hound's tongue is. And so it's a problem because it does spread really readily in fur and clothes. People may find it on their pants when they get to the trailhead. Mm-hmm. And what do we do with burrs? We take them off and probably throw them on the ground. But that's not what we want to do, right? Because it's a weed. We want to throw it away. So this event is really about teaching people about that particular weed, letting them know that as it spreads through our forests, it replaces the forage or food for our wildlife. And it can spread very quickly because it gets in the fur. So yesterday we had several folks and 10 or 15 dogs that came out, ran through all of this hound's tongue, which we normally would say don't do, but we had a plan for collecting all those seeds. And we combed all the seeds off the dogs, pulled them off the people, and by the end of the day, we collected over 76,000 seeds. So that's 76,000 plants that won't be growing next year.
And where was that event at?
That was just at PC Hill, at the base there, yep. And we also worked with Park City to remove some of the old fencing that was there because it had been, just over time, gotten pushed down. And the barbed wire that was there and just the metal of the fence, the wire, was a little bit of a hazard for dogs and wildlife. So both us and Park City wanted to take care of that.
Yeah. So I know right now there has to be someone listening that's just like hearing this and so inspired to start pulling weeds. I understand you've got some future opportunities for people to get involved. What can you tell us about that?
Definitely. We have for 3 more weeks, we have a program called the Noxious Weed Ambassador Program. And if anyone has seen the orange boxes out on the trail system, a bunch on McLeod Creek, a couple in Round Valley, I think even North Round Valley or maybe Old Ranch Road, they're kind of all over the county. But if you see those boxes, look at the signs. It'll tell you what weeds we're looking for and how best to control each of them. And then go on out and pull them or clip the flower heads and seed heads off, put them in a bag, leave them next to the box. Scan that QR code and enter to win. We do a drawing every 2 weeks. And just the best way for us to thank those folks that are out there on the trails helping us with as many miles as there are of trails here in Summit County. I don't think one organization can possibly take it on. And I don't even think all of the partnering organizations can take it on. So we really need the community to help us get that done.
Yeah. And we were speaking earlier, you were saying in the winter, it's kind of a work shift to more of a data collection kind of workflow. What do the winters look like for you? Kind of how are you planning with this job? Just season of growth of plants.
Well, we run like crazy from May till probably the end of October. And we collect data on weeds all season long. So there's a lot of data, just cleanup, verification. And then all of that data is used to report to our partners as well as our funders, which is often the Utah Department of Ag and Food and the Utah Weed Supervisors Association. In order for us to justify the funds that they give us every year, we provide maps and reports and raw data if they want it. Sometimes they use our stuff to put it in the weed calendar that they use for fundraising. And then we start the next round of grant writing.
Yeah. And we were speaking, see a lot of growth and development here, Summit County and obviously in the surrounding area. How does that contribute to noxious weeds? Like, is that really contributing to the growth of them? Can you kind of just kind of speak on the correlation there?
It is probably one of the biggest reasons that we have more species now than we did 10 years ago.
And is that digging into the ground? Like, what is really pushing that?
Such a good question. It's really about making sure that equipment that's being used is being cleaned from one site to another. And it's the simplest thing. You know, with trail building, we work with mountain trails to help them figure out when they're putting in new trails the best way to prevent spread. If they don't know that there's a population of weeds that they're going to go through, they may start with a clean piece of machinery and then cut through a population of weeds. Those seeds can get on that machine, and then as they continue further down in the trail, those seeds can get deposited, right? And so Mountain Trails is working really hard now to find, all right, what is there on that trail that we're about to cut, and how do we access it with a clean machine in clean areas, and then access the weedy areas after as much as possible, or clean on site so they can ensure that that seed isn't being spread. Now with development, it's happening at a huge scale, right? There's more machinery, there's soil, gravel, all sorts of things being brought in, and those seeds can be within that material. And that can be really hard to know when you're the person bringing it in. But if you go check out where you're getting that soil and that gravel and whatever it is, check the quarries it's coming from. If there are a lot of weeds around the material that you're getting, you're probably getting seed along with it.
Yeah. And obviously sounds like just such a massive problem to try to coordinate a response to, but you know, just for those individuals at home in their yard, I mean, are there kind of some basic tips you have for people just to be better stewards of the land?
Definitely. I think the biggest thing is know your weeds. If you don't know them, you don't know how to control them, and they'll escape from your yard. And if you don't know what they are, you have so many resources. Summit County's weed department is always willing to come out and help if you call them directly, or you can reach out to us at the summitcwma.org. A lot of times in your own property, you can remove most things by hand. If it's not a perennial that grows year after year after year with a deep root system, you probably don't need herbicide. And if I had my choice in every small yard, maybe we could avoid the use of herbicide. But when you have bigger populations, a lot more land, it can be really hard to manage by hand. So if you don't know what the weed is, ask for help, because what weed it is will tell you how you have to control it. Oh, and I forgot, we did have one more thing going on for the Houndstongue event. One of the things we did is we have a jar of seeds, and we had people guess how many seeds were in the jar. I'm not going to tell you how many there were because we decided to do a second round of it online. So if anyone wants to try and guess how many seeds are in that jar, go to summitcwma.org. And we have this amazing gift basket from a bunch of our local businesses like Healthy Pets, Nuzzles, Fetch, Raw Wild. I can't remember all the rest of them, but amazing folks that put these baskets together, and the person who gets the closest gets to take that home.
And what's the website again?
Summitcwma.org.
Go guess the seeds. Sarah, anything else you want to mention?
This is a good time if people have Canada thistle and other perennials to do control for those plants, because they are shutting down. And when they do that, they take all the nutrients from their leaves and they put them back in the root system. And if you do use herbicide, the herbicide goes deeper into the root system. So you're way more impactful in the fall than you are at any other time of year to be able to control those species. And there are some organic herbicides out there that are effective. You will have to use them every 2 weeks for at least 3 weeks. It won't kill the weeds completely, but if you're trying to avoid synthetics, there are definitely some options. So reach out if you're interested.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Sarah Jo Dickens about all things noxious weeds. Thanks for coming in, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. That's Sarah Jo Dickens. She's the Summit Cooperative Weed Management Areas Project Manager. Back to some local news. The Yore family wants to seal the deal on part of its land sale to Summit County this year. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports county staff say that's possible with additional money from a 2021 bond.
Summit County has the exclusive option to purchase the 834-acre Yore Ranch west of Camas until 2027. Staff say the Ewers would like to close the purchase on more than half of the land by December. It may take extra county money up front, but staff have been pursuing grant money to fund the ranch purchase. And County Lands and Natural Resources Director Jess Kirby says the county will pay itself back as the state, federal, and third-party grant awards come through. The idea is to stretch the general obligation bond voters approved for open space acquisitions in 2021 as far as possible. The Summit County Council expressed a willingness to pursue the accelerated timeline at its meeting Wednesday. Gene Canarella, who lives across from the ranch, made public comment.
Overall, we're extremely happy with what you've done and what's going on for that area to preserve it.
Summit County put $5 million down on the ranch in 2023, and the total purchase price will be $25 million. Its plan is to preserve the working ranch on a portion of the land and set aside other parcels for open space and recreation. Canarella, who lives on West 200 South, asked the county to be mindful of the traffic impacts as it goes through the planning process. There are still plenty of moving parts. Staff have amended plans for the land by dropping community housing, which drew some public pushback at the county's open houses. And an isolated parcel the county is buying from the Ewers happens to be where Francis City is looking to extend Hallam Road to meet State Route 248. Kirby explains that open space bond money shouldn't be used to purchase that particular 10-acre parcel at first.
I think it's the wisest move at this point because of the unknown of the Hallam Road extension and where that would fall. And we could, at a further point, make that into a conservation parcel.
The council agrees, and it will be possible to subdivide that parcel to purchase future conservation easements, which would ordinarily restrict new roads forever. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
In studio with me now, I've got Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff. How's it going
this
morning?
Hey, Parker. Good morning.
Good. Well, I guess we'll start, the Chamber recently held its annual meeting. Did you kind of want to give a brief recap of what happened there?
Yeah, the annual meeting is something that we're required to do every year per our bylaws. And it's just a great opportunity for us to highlight some of the accomplishments over the last year, plans for the upcoming year, and then highlight one award winner with our Miles Radiman Spirit of Hospitality Award. So if I may just indulge on a few of the highlights of the last year that we're super excited about, including surpassing our 1,000 member mark. In fact, we're just at over 1,050 now at this point. And I should note that our year is a fiscal year, so we calculate and estimate all of our impact based on July through June. And a lot of the work that we did this year was around the new brand, the Mountain Kind brand that we launched in April, which included a new website at visitparkcity.com, which is that visitor-facing website. So a lot of great rebranding and accessibility features on that website, as well as launching a new website for the Chamber of Commerce function that we also do at parkcitychamber.com. So a great new website there that features a lot of the evergreen content and resources that both our businesses, employees, and local residents might be interested. Also pages around sustainability and how to be more sustainable, relocation information, a lot of resources related to the research that we have available. So two great new resources that we launched this year. In addition to telling a great story about all of the marketing and management programs that we've been doing in the last year, including hosting media and generating over $80 million in added value stories about Park City and Summit County, hosting 80 writers. We were really pleased to host a Women in Travel Summit, which featured 400 travel influencers across the country, spent the day in Park City a few months ago. Just really excited to really tell Park City and Summit County stories in a way that we want those stories to be told. And then just another real quick highlight is around our sustainable tourism grants. We afforded 22 local organizations grants to help them implement and execute upon the community-wide sustainable tourism plan, which is now going into its third year. So a lot of great work, including our group sales team produced over 1,000 leads for our hotel properties in Summit County, representing over $20 million in economic impact. And one of the reasons why we really like the idea of group sales and groups and incentives and meetings coming to Park City and Summit County is it really helps fill in a little bit of that midweek market, which is really sort of that Sunday through Thursday, which helps keep those occupancies and spending levels high at a time when we really need it, and really sort of doesn't impact the locals in terms of more weekend traffic. So that's a really important part of the sustainable tourism plan, is making sure that we level out that visitation a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody's seen the new logo and branding.
I hope
town,
so.
the nice new modern touch. Can you kind of just speak about what goes into that, finding that identifier that's going to represent you for the next, you know, the years ahead?
Oh, man, we should do a segment just on a branding exercise. This is actually the fourth branding exercise that I've been through for a community. This process took about 18 months to complete, and it really started with a lot of research in terms of who we are as a community, what are our values, how do we want to present ourselves to the world. And then it went through first a logo mark for our organization, and then translated all the way through to a brand campaign, including discussions around color palette and what colors represent Park City well, and how do we do that in a way that really helps drive not just our winter visitation, which is obviously really important, but also the off seasons that we're trying to grow, especially summer and fall. So developing a color palette that doesn't compete with other color brand, you know, other brands and their color palettes. It was a fun and arduous task to put something together. And I think just what makes me so proud is that the way that the community identifies with the Mountain Kind brand, and this idea that as residents, we care about each other, we care about our community, we care about our environment, and that we're going to treat each other in a way that really represents this Mountain Kind concept. In fact, I was out on the trail this weekend, and, you know, bikers were saying hi to hikers, and everyone was being really kind and respectful in terms of, like, hopping out of the way. And my husband says to me, he's like, that was a really Mountain Kind hike today. So it's great that, you know, people are starting to use it, and we're really excited to push out the winter concept for the Mountain Kind brand, which, believe it or not, our winter brand launch is going to start here in just a couple of weeks to start promoting Park City for the winter.
Yeah, and the Mountain Kind term, you know, we saw some of the spots at the annual meeting. Can you pushing public transit, like, can you kind of talk about the values that that's really trying to push forward?
Yeah, what we really love about this Mountain Kind concept is that it not only represents who we are as a community and how we want to represent ourselves to the world, but also a little bit about what we expect and hope our visitors also participate in while they're here. So to be Mountain Kind is to take part in Mountain Kind activities like taking transit, which ultimately lessens congestion on our roads, which we know traffic and congestion is a pinch point for our residents, and we have some real surging related to traffic congestion, especially people coming into work, into school, and into ski all at the same time, and then leaving at the same time. So we know there are these surges, and the Mountain Kind concept is to take initiatives that really lessen some of the pinch points related to tourism. So taking transit, leave no trace, being kind on the trails, being kind to each other, you know, merging with traffic, all of these sort of just kindness values, which are really a lot of common sense. But it also really focuses on our business community too. You know, what can our businesses, both as employers and the way they treat their employees, how can they be more mountain kind in terms of recycling and composting and zero waste and all of these great initiatives that community-wide our nonprofits are pushing and really are desirable to be the world's most sustainable destination, which is ultimately our goal. How do we do that in a way that sort of branded under an umbrella, and really the beauty of this Mountain Kind message is that it creates this great big umbrella that people can now start to identify with, and identify with not only what is Mountain Kind, but what is not Mountain Kind behavior.
Yeah. I guess moving on, there's some recent numbers you have just for the hotel bookings and rates?
Yeah, we do. We have data through the end of August. So we are showing that occupancy in more luxury and condo-like properties, our Destinometrics reporting properties, show that August was down slightly, about 5% in terms of occupancy and volume, finishing August at about 40% average occupancy for the entire month. But during that same time, rates were up about 6%, which is also really good. So seeing a little bit of a down in volume, but up in rates. We are also gathering new data for more traditional types of lodging properties, which include more economy and moderate types of traditional hotel properties. And the data around those properties show that their occupancy was up just slightly, about a half of a percent, and average daily rates up about 4.5%. So generally speaking, I think August was probably a little softer than previous August. And September is at the moment looking a little bit soft. Looking at occupancy on the books right now as of August for September, paces down about 6%, but rates are also up 6%. So as we get more bookings in the month of September, I'm sure rates will go down a little bit and those occupancy numbers will go up. So overall, just a pretty, I would say, solid last couple of months, about on average with what we have expected and seen in the past. When you look at the last 6 months, in terms of how have we performed over the summer, occupancy finished at just about 40%, which was a little bit up. It was flat, about, you know, it was up 0.7%. And rates during that last 6 months were up about 5%. But looking up at the next 6 months, seeing a little bit of an uptick. We're seeing occupancy reservations pace up about 3%, and rates are pretty much flat. They're up 1%. So pretty much standard what we're seeing, not a ton of growth, not a lot of loss, sort of in that window. But what we're really seeing is some great spending in terms of visitor spending, which is always really important. When we look at August, which represents June performance, so we're always a little bit in arrears related to the tax data, sales taxes for August were down 11%, but the last 8 months for sales tax collections year to date are up 3%. Restaurant taxes for August, again, June performance up 3%. Transient room taxes were down for August, 9%, and recreation, arts, and parks right in line with that TRT, which was down 9%. So it's really kind of interesting to look at the ratio of for every dollar spent on lodging, how much is spent in the community, and to start to see some of the ratios related to when TRT, which is that transient room tax, which is basically that bed tax, how that directly relates to spending in our community.
Yeah, kind of running out of time, but I understand you guys have got a bunch of events coming up. What do you want to touch on?
We do. I just want to make sure that your listeners save the date for our Tourism Fall Forum. We'll have about 300 seats available for that on November 1st from 11:30 to 1:30. It's a lunch event. And this is really one of our signature events. It's the kickoff to the winter mm-hmm. season. We have a great panel from our resort properties who will tell us what's new and what to expect for the upcoming year. We'll also have Catherine Rainey Norman, who's the co-chair of the Olympics, there with us to kind of give us an overview of what to expect. And then we'll also have Haley Batten, who is a Park City local who won silver in mountain biking, just to share with us her experience at the summer games and what it was like to grow up in Park City and what Park City meant to her as an Olympian and Olympic athlete. So great content there. We're so excited. It will sell out. Tickets will go on sale in the next couple of weeks. So look to your newsletter and our website to sign up for that because it's going to be a great event. And then we also have a free event happening. We're sponsoring an event with Park City Institute and Park City Lodging on October 10th. This event is a film called Beyond Zero, and it's all about how small businesses go above and beyond in trying to create Beyond Zero waste. So really great program in alignment with our sustainable tourism plan, and it's free to the public.
And that's at the library?
It's at the library.
And the Fall Forum, will that be at the Stein?
Stein Erickson Lodge.
Awesome. All right. Well, we've been speaking with Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff. Thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Parker. Happy fall.
Yeah. Have a good week.